Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to actor, director, and artistic director of Irish Classical Theater Company, Keely Sheridan. In 2023, Keely was named Artistic Director of Irish Classical Theatre Company. She has a diverse background as an actor, dancer, director, filmmaker, educator, and administrator. She holds an MFA in acting from Brooklyn College and an MFA in directing from the Lear Academy of Trinity College Dublin. In this interview, Keely and I speak about her connections to Ireland, physical theatre and Bhutto, expanding the canon, and the Irish Classical Theatre Company's upcoming production of Dracula, a Comedy of Terrors, which is being presented September 13th through the 29th, 2024. Spoiler alert, I am in the production with Keely, who has been an absolute joy to work with. Tickets to see us in Dracula, a Comedy of Terrors, are available at irishclassical.com. I hope you enjoy my interview with Keely. Keely Sheridan, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
My pleasure. I'm very well. Thank you.
Fantastic. I always like to start these interviews by asking, is there a story from your youth that connects to what you do today?
Yeah, I guess my dad is very creative. He was an actor for a while and a musician. And I think he did a really good job, he and my mom both, of weaving sort of like play and imagination and story into everyday kind of mundane just life. But I grew up seeing my dad perform and be on stage, so it felt really natural that people just did that. And then I started Irish step dancing when I was very young. And so the world of performance felt sort of very interwoven into my childhood. And I kind of just never left. I wanted to always be involved in this sort of the ritual around getting everyone together at the same time in the same place and rehearsing and making sure everything was just right. And it became a kind of rhythm of my life. So yeah, I guess my whole childhood brought me here.
That's incredible. Speaking of Irish dancing, you were in the 2009 Irish Dance World Championship. Mm-hmm. How did you get there and what was that experience like?
So I went with a dance drama team, actually, which is a category in Irish step dancing that is theater and Irish dance woven together. So you tell it's sort of a theatricalized narrative dance. And it was that might have been one of the first years that they had that category at the Worlds. It was in Philadelphia that year. But I grew up Irish step dancing with a school in the Southern Adirondacks called the Wild Irish Acres School of Irish Dance. And it was a non-competitive school. It was just for fun. We did a ton of shows. It was very performance focused, but I didn't really start competing until I was an older teenager, which for people who are in the Irish dance world, that's quite late. Usually you start competing very early. But I had been doing it for a long time and all of my sisters did it with me. And so it was really kind of like a family activity. And then when I moved to New York City in my late teen years, I started dancing with the Niall O'Leary School, and they are a competition school. And so kind of got folded into the competitive arm of all of it at that point. And I don't know, I've always loved Irish dancing. I've always loved being involved in it. It's this really sort of beautiful cultural connection, but also aside from the competition aspect, there's a lot of social dance aspect to Irish dance. The Cayley form especially is kind of like square dancing, kind of, you know, it is meant to be communal. It's not so much about the perfection of the form as the communal experience. So I clung to it. I stuck with Irish dancing as I was training as an actor in Manhattan, and ended up competing with Niall School in 2009 in the world. We did not win, but it was really cool just to be at the World Championships.
It's fantastic. So after that, you said you started to, you moved to New York, you were continuing dancing, mm-hmm. but you started your acting career. Sometimes sort of words fail when you ask a question because like you can't necessarily find the most elegant way of asking it. But I was interested to know if there was a moment in your acting career where you felt like, yes, like this is so successful, or this is what I want to do, or, you know, this is, I'm really understanding this art form and what you took from that experience.
I think, I'd imagine this is, I know this is pretty common, at least among friends that I've talked to, but I still haven't had a, yes, this is successful moment in my acting or creative career at all. I just think because it is, you know, your craft evolves and grows as you evolve and grow. And so I don't think you ever crack it. I think you find different ways of relating to your work at different phases in your life that can feel really truthful and authentic and fulfilling. But I say to my students too, you know, I taught acting for a long time, that I as an acting teacher, I'm more of a doula than like a sort of sensei, and that I'm facilitating their own relationship with the craft, but it's not like this thing I've figured out that I can then like have them model after me. But you know, to be honest, I think that mindset is why I'm still doing it and why I've stayed, you know, with this career that is really challenging and is full of rejection and full of insecurity and self-evaluation, not ever feeling like I needed to have made it, but rather that I'm continuing to choose to make it my lifestyle and and my profession, kind of keeps me sane.
I hear you. There's that sort of famous Martha Graham quote that's like, there is a queer divine dissatisfaction kind of in the work of things. So I do understand what you are talking about. In a similar kind of avenue, you're also a physical theater artist and you served as the mm-hmm. co-artistic director, or potentially maybe you still are the co-artistic director. Is it for the UME group?
Yep. Yeah, I still am. Yeah.
That's fantastic. How did you find physical theater and how might you describe that work to our listeners?
I think, so for me, it just felt like a very natural crossover because I grew up in dance and then I started doing theater after that, that the movement aspect of storytelling always really excited me and felt very intuitive to me. So I didn't know what physical theater was for a long time. And I guess with that particular group, I sort of became involved. So when I was training in acting, my MFA in acting at Brooklyn College, part of our curriculum was Butoh dance, which is Japanese contemporary dance, modern dance form, that deals with the kind of illogical and nonlinear and sort of more ugly, authentic patterned movement that is a part of humanity and life and nature, but that isn't often celebrated in many Western dance models, which are about form and execution and hitting a mark. And this Butoh dance is much more about finding an authentic physical expression for an internal sensation or idea. And that just lit me up. I think as an actor, it's really, really useful and has a lot of crossover with image work and other practitioners who do that. So I came across the UME group because I was at the right place at the right time with the right person, but I took a workshop with Yoko, who is now a very dear friend and collaborator, but at the time was a co-participant in a workshop with a practitioner named Diego Pignon, who has a practice in Brooklyn. And through that sort of community came to find the UME group and ended up doing a training lab with the UME group, which then turned into, they had this really cool training ensemble model where a group of artists with specializations in different areas would get together and teach each other their forms, or kind of a crash course in their forms. So I led a Cayley ensemble. I actually led an Irish dancing ensemble with them and stayed involved and performed and created a couple of pieces, dream dances, and then went away to grad school for directing. And as I was away in grad school directing and learning and then having Zoom calls across the ocean with the founding artistic director, Jordan Rosine, they were in the process of applying for their own grad school journey. So I kind of came back from grad school and Jordan just tagged me in. So I took over the UMA group from there. It's kind of the best of both worlds, right? Dance and theater, and not having to abide by the rules, not that anyone has to abide by any rules, but, you know, being able to live in between the two is really exciting for me.
I think that's incredible. You mentioned that you have your MFA from Brooklyn College in acting. You mm-hmm. also have an MFA in directing from the Lear Academy of Trinity College in Dublin / RADA. What inspired you to get those degrees? I think it's amazing that not only an MFA is difficult to get one, to have two is really an incredible thing.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes why I did two. No, it was precisely the right thing for me to do, but yeah, it was a lot. The MFA in acting, I was out of school for several years. I actually had a really nonlinear path with higher education. I graduated high school a year early and started college when I would have technically been a senior in high school. I was a freshman at a local school in the Adirondacks where my family was. And then I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and did a year there, couldn't pay for it, so I dropped out. Took a couple of classes at some CUNY schools, but then spent maybe 5 years out of school without a bachelor's, without a degree at all, acting, auditioning, making work. It was a financial decision at the time, but I think it also ended up being really smart for me in my life, because then I ended up completing my undergraduate degree and deciding to go for an MFA in acting because I knew myself as an actor at that point in the real world. I had had real world experience. I had known myself outside of a training context, and I had begun to identify patterns and things that I thought I needed to work on to be a stronger performer. So I went to Brooklyn College for my MFA in acting, absolutely loved it. It's a gem of a program. It's the only public MFA in acting on the East Coast, or at least at the time that was true. And it certainly was the only one in New York State. Through that, I learned a lot about myself. That training was this was also around the time that people were just starting to have the conversations in acting training about what it was that we were actually teaching and how we were training and sort of forcing this idea of neutrality on actors that inherently was cisgendered, heterosexual, white, affluent from the Northeast. And so for me, it was really transformative because I spent my earlier acting training and acting career kind of trying to make myself more castable and like trying to fit this mold of these roles that kind of kept coming up for me, but that didn't really fit well. They didn't fit, or, you know, they were fine, but they weren't. I felt like there was this huge piece of myself that I wasn't bringing to my work. And then I did this MFA in acting, which was very much just like embrace your weird and let your freak flag fly and just be kind of who you are, because that's what you can offer to a role. And at the end of that, I spent another year or two continuing to work, continuing to act. But that whole process really got me thinking about theater making as a whole. And I had this tendency as an actor, and I would keep the thoughts inside, but I always had thoughts about everybody else's work and like suggestions or ideas, and like, oh, that would land so much better if you did this or that. And I can't remember who I confided it to, a friend, someone in a process. And they were like, well, have you considered directing? And I had not. And I was in New York. I had spent my entire professional career in Manhattan and Brooklyn. And I had always wanted to travel and to study abroad. And I came across, I actually was initially aiming to apply for some sort of Fulbright scholarship because I wanted to travel. And the scholarship office at Brooklyn College, of which I was an alumni, said, you know, based on your research and just the work you do and who you are, you might want to look at the Mitchell Scholarship, which is a similar to a Rhodes or a Marshall. It is a fully funded master's degree program fellowship. You're an ambassador for the U.S. Ireland Alliance, and they send you to the school of your choosing in Ireland. So I applied for it and I got it. And I was one of 12 people who went that year, 12 scholars. And so I had this tremendous support from the U.S. Ireland Alliance, and I had the opportunity to think of myself as a director in a city that I had no context for. Like, people didn't know me as an actor there. And that was something that I had a big insecurity about, that working in my same circle that I had worked in as an actor, now as a director, I kind of felt like an imposter. So it was nice to go somewhere else and work in an entirely different circle that only knew me as a director. And that program was intensive and very challenging, but I grew. I mean, it was a pressure cooker. So I just changed and grew exponentially. And I think something interesting happened there, where it was the first time I ever had to contextualize myself as an artist, as an American, because I was the foreigner. I had always only ever worked in New York, and New York is so multicultural anyways that identity and cultural identity comes up, but it's kind of assumed that everyone's from somewhere else. Whereas in Ireland, you know, I was the foreigner for sure, even despite, you know, having Irish ancestry. So that was an interesting thing too, for me to kind of reconcile and start to meditate on my relationship to my citizenship and my nationality, and my how that does or doesn't impact my art. Sorry, that's the longest answer. So then I was in Dublin at Trinity at the Lear. It was also a very new program. It was only in its third year of, I was the third group of directors to go through. So it was exciting because there was a lot still changing in the program, and now they're in their 10th year or their 11th year. But it was a small cohort, and it was very collaborative with the designers and the playwrights. And so I think I got out of it everything that I wanted to in a very short amount of time. And then I came back to New York because I had a fiance and a life back in New York. And so I came back right after grad school and stayed in New York after that.
That's fantastic. I know, in addition to sort of being an actor and a director, you've also been a teacher and a professor. How does teaching inform your work as an artist?
I think teaching helped me figure out the problems I'm having as an artist, like teaching, having to articulate craft and process. Helps me unpick the snarls that I'm experiencing in my own personal craft and process. I think too, I find teaching so, I guess, fulfilling, because I see in my own craft and process at times things that I can very clearly trace to specific moments in my training or specific early career moments, and things are changing in our industry so rapidly that I find teaching is kind of that moment to intentionally make space for change in our industry, and to intentionally kind of both teach students about the world that they're entering, the industry that they're entering, but empower them to be skeptical and curious about how they can make that industry better. And I find that deeply fulfilling. So, yeah, I love teaching.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, you moved to Buffalo a year ago to become the new artistic director at Irish Classical Theatre Company. What was it about kind of this position that made you say, yes, I have to come to Buffalo?
It felt for me really like the kind of perfect convergence of all of these different streams of experience and identity and process for me. It really did. A friend of mine actually sent me the job description, and she said, it's like they wrote this for you. It's like they wrote this for you specifically. And I looked at it like, oh yeah, it kind of does. It kind of does feel pretty aligned with my experiences, both in training and culturally and the type of work that I've developed. But I actually at that moment was not, I was working as an artist in residence at Union College in Schenectady. I really loved the students I was working with. I was very close to my family there too. So it was kind of like, I don't know, I had felt kind of settled, and seeing an opportunity like this that spoke to so directly to so many of my aspects of my identity, was a little exciting, but also a little kind of destabilizing, because I really hadn't imagined I was not hunting for a position like this. And so I think what ultimately really did bring me here was the interview process and my getting to know Vincent, my getting to know Cassie, our producing director, and Kate, my predecessor, and some other members of the company's history. Because without those exact combinations of people, I think it may not have been as enticing for me to come, but I believe so deeply and I saw so clearly what this moment of this company is and how my experience aligns with and could support and help evolve the company into its next iteration. I had only ever driven through Buffalo once prior to coming here to interview. I had spent a night in Buffalo, actually in Niagara Falls, not even in Buffalo. And I don't know, when I came for my, it was a kind of crazy process because I wasn't able to come to any of the interviews as they had set them up. I was in Ireland doing research over the summer. So I did my first interview from New York City where I was assisting on Dee Kinahan's The Savior at Irish Rep. So I was assisting on a new Irish play there. And then after that, I was going to Ireland and I was doing research. And so I did my second round of interviews from Dublin. And then I had to come back and drive to Buffalo for a tiny little window because I was doing a show in the Adirondacks. I was acting this summer. And at every point, it sort of just felt really natural and not easy because there are so many challenges to being in this industry right now. But it felt, it kind of felt meant to be, honestly, for me. It just made sense. It continued to make sense with every step that I went through the interview process. And I think Buffalo is really, really unique with the number of theaters that operate, a professional or semi-professional model with per capita to people who live here too. It's like this incredibly dense, saturated theater network. And I think obviously that's a big part of the fabric and of the culture of Western New York. But I also think there's a tremendous amount of tremendous space for growth and room to really kind of make more opportunities, not only for the artists here, but to have more sort of exchange and to make this a destination for artists too. So that's what brought me. That's why I'm here.
That's incredible. I'd love to ask about the mission of Irish Classical Theatre Company and how the company will kind of continue to maybe bring or maybe evolve that mission for our next generation of theatre goers.
Yeah, so the mission of the company is to present plays of exceptional caliber, international classics, Irish plays, both classical and contemporary plays of exceptional merit. So when you really look at the mission, it kind of includes everything, technically. And I had recently talked with Vincent O'Neill about that, and he was the one who had asked the Board of Trustees to amend the mission to include contemporary works as well. So that was a part of what Vincent was doing before I came here, and then certainly what Kate continued. I want to remain true to that mission. I think if anything, my hope is to expand the interpretation of the mission. I think there are moments where there are plays that come across my lap and I am like, oh gosh, this doesn't make sense for Irish classical, but this is a great play. But I think more often, there are moments where I realize that the strength of Irish classical and having these two qualifiers in our title is that we have the opportunity to offer something very specific and to offer something that wouldn't make sense for anyone else to offer. And I think there's a lot of value in that as a theater company and a theater producer in this post-COVID world where everyone's figuring out sort of how does live art fit? How do we support the live arts? And I think though certainly there are plays that I love that don't fit in our mission, it makes the most sense to me to expand our mission, to expand the interpretation of the mission, but to stay true to it because it is so unique and specific. And so I kind of want to stay in our lane. I just want to expand our lane. I want to be in the shoulders of the lane a little bit. So for me, what that looks like is looking at a really kind of expansive and inclusive picture of contemporary Ireland and its diaspora, because it is very diverse. Ireland is a diverse country now, and especially if you're living in I lived in Dublin, and you see it everywhere. You see it on the streets. People, you are in an international European city. You're not just in a kind of homogenous community. I think also focusing on the diaspora, which is interesting. I think that there aren't as many organizations or entities that really make that their mission, to look at the people who have left, as is the truth for many, many countries who've been colonized. There are more people living elsewhere than there are in the country itself who trace that ancestry. So that's a really interesting thing for me to look at too. All of these Irish American people and the ways that the roots of this country have spread Ireland throughout the world, not just the US. And then I think too, with the classical aspect, I'm really interested in adaptations. I'm really excited by the way that contemporary writers and artists are engaging with classics. I'm really excited at looking at how and why they engage with specific texts and what that says to us right now. Because I think that there is, you know, I'm trying to think of the kind of the condensed way to do this, because we could talk about this for hours, but obviously there is a sort of imbalance historically in the way the Western canon has kind of positioned itself at times to be the canon. And that's something I'm very aware of and eager to kind of unpick. But also I think the classical text, understanding the context in which they were written and then asking the question really intentionally, what would that say to an audience now? I'm not interested in producing classics just because they're classics. I'm interested in figuring out what it is that they say to this moment now. And does that require a different lens, a different frame, a different translation by a contemporary writer, maybe? So that's sort of where my head is at.
How exciting. That's really an incredible answer to a very complex and perhaps unfair question. I'd love to ask now just to kind of maybe quickly, if you give us a little sort of tidbit about each of the shows of the season. I know that we're rapidly running out of time, so I want to be mindful of that.
Sure, yeah.
But just, so the first show up in the season this year is Dracula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors by Gordon Greenberg and Steve Rosen. Bram Stoker was Irish. He was born and raised in Clontarf, just north of Dublin. Not a lot of U.S. people know that. I didn't know that. It's a 90-minute romp. It's a fast-paced sort of Mel Brooks meets Rocky Horror Picture Show meets Dracula traipse through this text. It's not precious with the text at all, but I think people who love Dracula or any of its cinematic iterations will find some real fun kind of nostalgia in it. And it's quick and it's snappy and it's fast and silly. And I think a really fun way to start off the season and a fun curtain up show. After that, we have the Fitzgeralds of St. Paul. It's a preview production of a brand new musical, never before been fully staged. Our audiences in Buffalo will be the first to ever see it. F. Scott Fitzgerald famously was of Irish American descent, but also spent part of his childhood here in Buffalo. He lived in the Lenox Hotel for part of his childhood. He took dance lessons at the Century Club. He grew up seeing plays just north of where Irish Classical stands today at the Old Tech Theater. And this piece focuses on Zelda's story, his wife's story, who of her own right was a prolific writer and artist. And often I think has lived in the shadows of her very, very famous husband. The beautiful two-person musical. We have an extraordinary cast coming up from the city. Danny Mefford, Broadway director, choreographer, is coming to direct. And Christy Bauer, the composer, lyricist, writer, will be in residence with it. So that piece will be evolving as it's here in Buffalo. And then our third show is The Loved Ones by Erica Murray. Erica is an exceptional young Irish writer. She is on commission with the Gate and the Abbey in Ireland currently, and The Loved Ones was a hit in the 2023 Dublin Theatre Festival. A fun fact is Erica and I went to grad school together. She was at the Lear with me at the same time, and I have always loved her writing and could not wait to find a home for it here. So this is the North American premiere of that play. That play has only ever been produced in Ireland. And then after that, we have Dorian by Phoebe Eclair Powell and Owen Horsley, also a North American premiere. It's only been produced, I think, twice before. And it looks at Oscar Wilde's life through a lens of the picture of Dorian Gray and sort of how his personal life and his creative writing were symbiotic and at times allowed him to kind of live through scenarios or versions of life that he wasn't able to live, in his actual life. That piece is really exciting. I think it does really exciting things with form. It flashes back and forth between sort of the Victorian period and today, and I think is really beautifully written. And then the last piece is Crocodile Fever by Megan Tyler, the Northern Irish writer. It's about two sisters coming together to sort of unpack some family trauma set against the backdrop of the Troubles in Northern Ireland in the late 70s. It's been described as a sort of Quentin Tarantino for feminists, is how one of the reviews described it. I describe it as Quentin Tarantino meets Derry Girls. So it is wild. It is a Black comedy. It's very dark, but also quite comedic and fun. And I'm directing that one. I'm very excited to have my directorial debut. So that's the season. It all ties back to Ireland somehow. Several of the texts interact with classics or classic figures, but all of them are Western New York premieres with several North American premieres as well. So it truly is a season of things that you can only see at Irish Classical, which I'm really proud of.
Fantastic. I will put the link for season subscriptions and all ticket information in the show notes, because hope that people will see all of them. My final question for you is, after people see any kind of play or anything at Irish Classical Theater Company, how do you hope they leave the space?
So I guess it depends on the play, the relationship that they have with the space, but I hope that they leave the space feeling like they were a part of something, because theater is not a passive spectator sport, and especially in our space in the Andrews Theater, it's so intimate. Not that there's any pressure on the audience to do or be anything, but just alchemically being in that space means that you are a part of what happened. And so I hope they leave feeling like they were a part of a communal experience. I hope they leave feeling seen. I hope they leave feeling inspired and curious. And I hope they leave wanting to talk about the experience with a friend, whether they loved it or hated it, that's okay. Oscar Wilde has a great quote about art being useless, but also that art says more about the audience. And so I think that there's room for all sorts of experiences. And I think in a season like this, that is so diverse, there are going to be things that you love, and there are going to be things that are maybe out of your comfort zone as an audience member. But I hope you want to talk about it when you leave.
Fantastic. Those are my questions, but I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share? And if the answer is no, that's totally fine. But I always like to kind of open the door just in case we miss something.
I'll mention just quickly that we started dipping our toe into, and I'm excited to continue doing this, presenting the work of international artists. So we had Luke Casserly's piece Distillation in a very limited engagement at the theater in June. And I'm excited to continue working with Culture Ireland to bring the work of Irish artists here to the U.S. As a presenting entity, which is exciting because you get a different, everything that we do now at Irish Classical, we produce in-house. But we're hoping to also use our space as a more direct kind of conduit and network to the work, the contemporary work coming out of Ireland, because it is a really exciting moment in theater history in Ireland right now. So look, keep an eye out for things that will pop up. Those shows don't get programmed years in advance. They get programmed a month in advance. So keep an eye out for some pieces coming through Buffalo.
Fantastic. Keely Sheridan, thank you so much for your time. I guess for people who are listening, we'll tell them now that we are both going to be in Dracula Comedy of Terrors playing sisters. So please come and see us be sisters in that upcoming production. That was great to chat with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Keely. If you're looking for some great laughs, go see Dracula, a Comedy of Terrors at Irish Classical Theater Company. Tickets and more information are available at irishclassical.com. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered the episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising, Local Matters Studios.